We have two more storytellers left, so let's just bring the next one up. Our next storyteller is a video producer, a lover of food, bikes, and stories. Please welcome Dakin Henderson.
Thank you. I want to just say that I love this event so much. It's like every time it's really amazing. And thank you guys so much for doing it. Okay. On the first day of the pain, I didn't think very much of it. It was just a little nugget of soreness nestled up against my rectum. I was in my mid-20s, living in Boston, and I had more important things to think about. The second day of the pain was the transition from to Something was going on down there, and I didn't know what. The day went on and the pain got worse, and so I called my doctor and set up an appointment for the day after next. So it was on the fourth day of the pain that I showed up at the doctor's office. And they have this form that you fill out at the doctor's office where you rate your level of pain on a scale from 1 to 10. And I was hurting at that point. The pain had been increasing, and I was distracted. I couldn't sit still, and I was worried. But I didn't want to be a wimp. I knew that there were people out there with far worse ailments than me, and they were the people that could mark a 7 or an 8 on the pain scale. Marking a 9, I knew, was reserved for catastrophic, crippling injuries. And if you mark a 10, you're basically dead, right? Like the maximum amount of pain that is physically possible for a human to feel. So I allowed myself to mark a 6.5, cringing at my weakness, and the doctor gave me some hemorrhoids cream and sent me home. The next couple of days were pretty bad. The pain became unbearable. It was like an astrological black hole that sucked my consciousness into my butt. I could think about nothing else, and I could not sleep at night. And instead of just lying there, my friend had lent me the entire DVD set of the HBO series Band of Brothers. Has anyone here seen that show? It's like Brian put it, it's like 12 hours straight of Saving Private Ryan. Like these graphic, violent, awful war scenes. And I just watched episode after episode all night long. And it kind of put me in my place. Like, here were guys getting their arms and legs blown off, their guts spilling out. They could have marked an 8 or a 9 or a 10 on the pain scale, and still, they always came back and said, "Captain, take me to the front lines." These were real men, I thought, as I buried my face into the pillow and cried. A couple of years earlier, not long after I graduated from college, my mom took me out to dinner, and at some point in the conversation, she asked me, "Dakin, will you be a daughter to me?" Now, I knew what she meant. She meant, "Will you be there for me when I get old?" But what she said was, "Will you be a daughter to me?" And I have to admit, I kind of resented her for it. On the one hand, I was like, "Mom, I don't know if I'm going to be living in Boston for the next 30 years, so don't put that on me now. And also, I'm your son. Don't ask me to be a daughter to you." And I want to tell you something. in today's society, at least in the slice of society that I live in, there's a lot of feminine energy out there, and it's growing, especially in this town. And it's a wonderful, beautiful, powerful thing. But I want to say right now to every woman in this room and any woman that might be listening on the radio that being a man in your gaze is full of contradictions. I'm supposed to be tough, but sensitive. Smooth, but with grit. I need a soft touch with calloused hands. I'm fine with being intellectually, professionally, and financially inferior. But you still want me to pay for dinner on a first date? Where is the line between confident and creepy? Between assertive and patronizing? How do I balance strength with honesty, solitude with love? How can I be self-sufficient? And at what point do I admit that I need and then ask for help? Not that all of this was going through my mind when my mom asked me to be a daughter to her, but figuring out what masculinity even means in an increasingly feminized world has been something that I've struggled with in the years that followed. And so, on the seventh day of the pain, I asked my mom to please take me to the emergency room. On the surface, you couldn't really tell that there was anything wrong with me. There was some subtle swelling on one cheek, but really nothing to indicate the raging inferno of agony burning beneath the surface. I called it the Death Star. So it took some figuring out for the doctors to finally diagnose me. And it was after I went in for an MRI that a surgeon came in and told me that I had an abscess, an infected, pus-filled cavity deep beneath the surface. And in his words, that it was not small. They immediately took me in for surgery to drain it. And I wasn't awake for this part, but they lay me on my back, hung my legs up by my ankles, dug an inch-long tunnel into my gluteus muscles, and drained out, again his words, 8 ounces of foul-smelling off-white liquid. That's about one measuring cup, by the way. But man, when I woke up, the relief was immediate. The pain was gone. The Death Star was gone. The galaxy was safe again. I actually sang the Jedi theme song for Luke Skywalker when the surgeon came into the room. Dun 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 dun. The surgeon almost smiled, almost, and proceeded to tell me and my mom that I now had a baseball-sized cavity in my butt that needed to heal from the inside out. They didn't want the entrance of it to heal over before the cavity had fully filled up. So it had to be constantly packed with gauze and changed out daily. I went home, the anesthetic wore off, and I sank into a low point in my life. I was already in one of those what is the point of all of this phases, and now my days consisted of lying on my stomach, sitting on a donut cushion, and biting the pillow as my mom poked gauze into my wound with a 4-inch Q-tip. And to make matters worse, I'm sorry, everybody. They had sent me home from the hospital with these diaper things, but I quickly ran out of those, and so my mom comes back from the store with a package of heavy-duty feminine pads. Feminine pads! I stuck them to the inside of my underpants. Ladies, I may be the only man you know who truly understands. I had a follow-up appointment with a surgeon a couple days later, and he's looking at my blotchy feminine pads, and I make some comment to him like, can you believe that my mom got these things for me? And the surgeon just looks at me and says, you know, we used to use feminine pads in the Marines to protect our tailbones while doing sit-ups for hours on a concrete floor. And I was like, what? For some reason, the image of a bunch of Marines doing thousands of sit-ups on a concrete floor with feminine pads tucked into their backs of their shorts helped me to understand that all this stuff was just in my head. Like, this, so much of this masculine-feminine dichotomy is just something that we tell ourselves or something that we're told. And on top of that, the world is not black and white. Our lives don't play out in these binary extremes. Information doesn't come in yes or no answers. Life itself is full of contradictions. A couple of months later, literally right as my wound had finished healing, my mom was in a bike accident. And there was no car, there was no hit and run, no dog that jumped out, no child. There was kind of a pothole, but really, she just fell. And I don't want to make the whole story about this. It could be about this, but all you really need to know is that it was bad. She broke her wrist, her jaw, a cheekbone, a couple of vertebrae, and the worst part was the brain injury. It took 5 days for her to wake up from the coma, weeks before she learned to talk again, months before she could walk comfortably again, and it was years before she felt like she was in control of her life again. And this happened at kind of a transitional moment in my life. My job had just started up again. I was staying with my parents temporarily and looking for an apartment with some friends in Boston. And so when Mom's accident happened, it was pretty easy to decide to just move in with my parents and live with them while my mom recovered. And don't think that I was being all noble or anything. I wasn't her caretaker. I wasn't dressing her wounds. I wasn't helping her go to the bathroom. That was all my dad's territory. I was just there. But there for her. As my mother's son. Thank you.